Aloha, this is Johnny Jett, and welcome to my podcast, my YouTube channel. And as you can tell, today we're going to be talking all things Hawaii. We're lucky to have Nathan Cam, who is the president of the public relations department at Anthology Group, which is a hospitality, PR, marketing, I assume. And he's been doing it for over 20 years. And I've known him probably close
good to see
that.
You, bud.
How long we've known each other
for? I think we have. I think we've known each other for a better part of those two decades. Yes, yeah. Sir. Yes, sir.
This guy is the man. He knows everything about Hawaii. He lives in Hawaii. And whenever I go, we always, almost always, you know, share a meal. I even played on the softball team.
That's right. Which we was kicked butt that year. That was good, man.
Did we win, by the way?
I can't remember. I think I actually hurt my knee after that afternoon, but we certainly had fun. I can't remember if we won or not, but we certainly had a heck of a time. So
for sure.
Yeah.
So anyway, if you haven't been to Hawaii, you need to go, but not right now, obviously.
Right.
Actually, we'll talk about it. So what's it like in Hawaii during COVID?
Yeah, man, it's been kind of surreal, right? A lot of different orders since the beginning of March and a lot of changing things. But right now, where we currently are in September, we're in for the island of Oahu, we're basically in a stay-at-home order as ordered by the city. And so most people have relegated to working from home or remotely. Only essential offices and businesses remain open. So yeah, it's just been absolutely surreal. We work in a brick and mortar shop, obviously, in downtown Honolulu. And in a matter of a few weeks, we had to move all of our staff, about 100 of them, out of downtown Honolulu and into their homes for the remainder of the year. So we've made that decision to go virtual the rest of the year. And when we can open the office, we do. And so some people still go in, but most people are hunkering down at home and working remote.
So how often do you go to the office?
So I go in maybe a couple times a month. You know, we're fortunate. The ability to work remotely and continue to do our good work for a lot of tourism clients and corporate and public affairs clients can still be done in this manner. So we're very grateful for that. But yeah, I mean, a couple of us are still going in. We have a research group. So a lot of the research folks are still going into the office on a regular basis to conduct the field work and do their part. But yeah, I would say 90-95% of the company is actually remote right now.
And the internet's been doing well there the whole time for everybody?
We're holding up. We're holding up. Yes.
I would think that would be a challenge. And by the way, have you had COVID or know anyone that has?
I have not, thankfully. Do I know people who have? Yes, I have. Not anyone in Hawaii, strangely enough. I mean, you know, we've been fortunate. I mean, our government took a stance of really sort of shutting everything down at the beginning. And so our spread has been relatively low until recently. You know, I think they relaxed some of the restrictions and we started to see a spike again in cases. And so we're starting to see that escalate. And if anyone's been watching the news, they saw that we had the Surgeon General here last week to help with our surge testing. And so, you know, we're expecting to see more cases show up, but overall, we've been fortunate. I know more people who live outside of Hawaii who have contracted COVID and have recovered from it, thankfully, than anyone personally here. So,
right. I mean, Hawaii was the gold standard until just maybe a couple of weeks ago, where they said they've had an outbreak and an outbreak for you guys, I think, is like 160 cases. I don't even know what it is right now, but it's not like Florida.
Yeah, we're surging. We've gotten up to about 300 cases, three something a day at our peak.
Okay.
But before that, I mean, we were almost down to zero, and then we were in the mid 20s, and then it kind of started to creep up. Then, you know, the hundreds were kind of common, and now we're kind of into the 300s. But
and do they do a lot of testing?
They do. I mean, they do a fair amount of testing, and a lot of it they're saying is attributed to just the kind of local lifestyle that we have here. There's a lot of families who share dwellings. And so, you know, the ideas of physical distancing and the requirements of doing that are sometimes more challenging. And in this particular case, I mean, they've noticed it, particularly amongst maybe the Pacific Islander population. But Hawaii is just, you know, anyone that comes here and knows the islands and lifestyle here, Hawaii is a pretty expensive place to live. So you have a lot of families who will live in a single home together to avoid that cost. or to share that cost. And as a result, you know, unfortunately, people are still going to work, or fortunately, people are still going to work, I should say. But, you know, the thing that we're all trying to figure out is, you know, this whole incubation period of time, and you can be asymptomatic, a carrier, and you just really don't know you're passing it around until it's too late. And so
that's a problem. Yeah. I think I read that the islands make up a 44% of Polynesians, but they count for 30% of COVID.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, and that's why there's big strides being made by the state of Hawaii, Department of Health, and the city, especially here on the island of Oahu, city and county of Honolulu, to really try to make sure that there's outreach to those communities. Because a lot of times it's a language barrier thing. It's a cultural barrier. They don't understand. There's just a lack of understanding in terms of what they need to do to help flatten the curve. And so you're seeing a lot of that communication roll out now, which will hopefully address some of those situations that we're seeing that are the cluster cases and such.
Gotcha. And so if I wanted to go to Hawaii right now, which, by the way, I was just on the beach here near LAX and I saw two Hawaiian Airlines wide bodies take off, and I pointed to my wife and my kids, and it just, you know, we dream about that. I mean, we had reservations to go in April. Obviously we had to cancel them, but so they're really strict right now. I could go, but I would have to quarantine for two weeks.
That's correct.
And fill out all these forms. And, you know, it's not like other states where it's like self-quarantine where, you know, it's on honor. I mean, if you go to check into a hotel, they'll give you a room key for like only one time use. And everyone's watching you. Yes. And they're following up on you.
That's correct.
Including the locals.
And you bring up a good point. You can still come if you want, but you're supposed to technically lock down in quarantine wherever you decide that is going to be your place of lodging for 14 days. And so, you know, you make that commitment, and you're right. They have a strong follow-up process. I mean, we have a lot of people who will call you daily to make sure that you're in your room. And like you said, the hotels are offering single-use keys. So once you're in, you're in. If you exit, you can't get back in. And that means you violated quarantine, and usually that's when they call the local authorities and they follow through. And, you know, we've had several people, as you've probably seen in the news, get arrested for that. You know, it's a hard task, obviously. You know, you hate to put so much of your local law enforcement resources against that. So, you know, what we've seen is you see community groups popping up. You know, we have these quarantine kapu breakers group that's kind of emerged on Facebook. That's become kind of a citizen patrol, if you will. And they basically field tips and follow through. And if people are violating their quarantine, they help to see that they either get back in order or they return home. And so, you know, we're taking this very seriously. It's overall, I mean, if I was to advise anybody who was thinking of coming here, it's really not a good time to come to Hawaii. You know, people come to enjoy the food, the place, the people, the beaches, obviously the activities and the culture. All of that is just, it's on pause right now. And, you know,
so are the hotels open up?
So there's several hotels that are open. I mean, they're not a lot. A lot of them are still kind of in very minimal operation. And a lot of them are not accepting reservations. Most we've heard, many we heard are not going to until this 14-day quarantine is dropped. Otherwise, you know, there's a lot of, why would people want to come here during a time like this? So, it just makes it hard.
Do you have any idea when they'll drop that quarantine?
Well, right now, October 1 has been set as the next date. It's been pushed back a couple of times.
Right.
You know, but it all is dependent on how we're doing in terms of our local cases here, how the virus is spreading. And,
I don't think October 1st, I think they're going to extend it.
Yeah.
Especially you know, they've had a spike increase. I just don't see it happening this year.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm hope I'm wrong. I really hope I'm wrong, but.
And the reality is, right, I think most of us who work in this industry realize that even when they do reopen, there's challenges around it, because even while we might have our quarantine drop, there's other locations, other states, other countries that have quarantine orders in place. So you might be able to come here, but when you go home, you'll have to quarantine there for 14 days. So it becomes a really difficult proposition, I think, for many people who are considering travel right now. Unless you're an essential traveler, then maybe it makes it a little bit more feasible. But, you know, it's just overall not a super good time to even be thinking about coming here right now, unfortunately.
And so is everyone wearing a mask?
I'm proud to say mostly everybody is wearing a mask here. You know, I go out to the grocery store to do my shopping, and, you know, so when we could go out to eat at the restaurants and dine in, which they're all now not allowed to dine in anymore. We're all back to takeout on Oahu. I think for the most part, everyone is trying to do their part to wear their masks and do the distancing and follow those orders. So, you know, I feel pretty safe when I'm around Oahu. Yeah,
that's good. So is there a problem getting food? Like the grocery stores, are there long lines or are the shelves empty?
No, I tell you, you know, in the earlier part of this whole pandemic, there's always sort of this panic mode, right? It's like when you have the hurricanes coming and sort of that kind of thing. People just freak out a little bit. You know, they go to the store, they empty out the shelves of all the flour, all the canned goods are gone. Toilet paper just disappears, you know, magically disappears out of there. But I will say, you know, we're an island community, obviously, so we rely on a lot of the shipping containers to bring us our goods, and our shipping suppliers here have always maintained that we're not going to see the kinds of there's nothing to worry about. You know, what we're seeing now is overbuying and a panic, and so, you know, the shipments are still coming in. They just can't keep the shelf stock. This was months ago. Right. You go to the grocery store now, I mean, there's everything's in there.
Can you buy wipes, like Clorox wipes? Because you cannot get them here.
Yeah. Sanitizer, wipes. I mean, you can see they're pretty abundant these days.
Wow.
Yeah.
I got to go to Hawaii, just get some wipes.
You know, I think that we've had some pretty innovative companies that have kind of stepped up to the plate to figure out how to get some of this stuff in. And we're hearing more and more about some grant money that is being thrown around by the state or offered by the state to get some of these local companies to develop or create PPP, you know, on some of those things. So we can be a little bit more self-reliant,
How about traffic? You know, especially Oahu. I mean, traffic, a lot of the islands have traffic. But Oahu especially.
Great. Traffic has been great. I will tell you, I mean, it's during the initial closures. I mean, I live in a place called Pearl City in Honolulu, which is about 15 minutes west of the airport. Right. So for me to commute into town every day on a normal business day where there's traffic, it usually is about, it can be about a 45 minute drive in, 40 to 45 minutes, depending on the traffic. Now I can go into town and back in about 40 minutes. And so it's, you know, roads are generally clear. When they did reopen the economy for a period of time, you could see some of that traffic creeping back in, you know? But now again, now that things are mostly shut down here in Oahu, yeah, you can be traveling at all times of the day and pretty much get there in a fair amount of time.
I mean, that's gotta be, almost has to be like the locals must be loving this and hating it, because first of all, they love tourists and tourism dollars, but the ones who are not dependent on tourism must be like, man, this is like old Hawaii. I assume. Yeah. I watch a surf cam, a webcam, almost every night to see the sunset in Hawaii. And it doesn't look like there's a lot of people out surfing either.
You know, I think there's a fair amount, but you know, those people that are out surfing are all locals now, right? And so I think there has been this part of, you know, there's been some building tension in the community about the impacts of tourism. I think like any destinations that's seen success out there, you know, Hawaii is not unique to this. We've heard plenty of times about other destinations, this idea of over tourism and all that. And I think what we're seeing now is, you know, we've had a chance to pause here in the islands and see what it feels like for a period of time without visitors and what right. that can be like. And I think what the tourism industry is committed to, and I know this because we work with many of those there, is working with community to try to figure out how to return to tourism, but in a more managed way, right? So it's fair and the locals can still continue to reap the benefits of having a tourism industry, but it needs to meet the needs of the locals. And so that's a big shift in change.
I mean, I assume just in December, or even January, you guys are probably having a conversation like, you know what? What are we going to do about this over tourism? I know a lot of hotspots, and Hawaii has to be one of them.
Yeah.
Because there were so many people coming. And I mean, there's almost like a silver lining to this.
There is. I mean,
if there is one.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the silver lining, I guess, is that it gives us, you know, to your point, I mean, how would we ever completely stop an industry? You know, why would we ever do that to try to reset it? And, you know, I guess if there's one bright spot in this pandemic for that reason, it's allowed the islands to heal a little bit. We've seen some of our natural resources come back, you know, places like Hanama Bay. And, you know, you see reports from time to time that you're seeing more life in the coral, different type, you know, fish coming back. And And so we see what we can do when we tread more lightly on our environment, right? And I think that's really inspired a lot of people to think hard about how do we do this right going forward. And I think a lot of companies who are involved in the industry, they've always wanted, you know, we have a lot of companies who are very responsible in the ecotourism space here. But how do you continue to build on that? You know, and how does the state support an effort like that? You know, the reality is we're not going to be getting back to 10 million visitors anytime soon. You know, not nearly in the next few years is what the experts and forecasters are saying of our economy.
So what, you were getting 10 million visitors a year?
10 million. We reached 10 million visitors to actually 10 point something last year.
And that was the most ever.
And that was, we were on record years for the last 7 or 8 years, every year reporting just new, more and more and more arrivals coming in. And so, you know, conversations were starting to turn a couple years ago about how do we put our hands around this? How do we put our arms around this and really get a hold of it? And it's a hard one, right? I mean, we're, as everyone knows, Hawaii is a very tourism dependent economy here.
Yep.
Didn't talk about diversification of our economy for many years. It's easier said than done. I mean, you know, some of it is due to our location. Some of it is due to just our physical infrastructure here and maybe the willingness to maybe move an idea like that forward. But you've seen some amazing groups of people rise up during this time who are thinking deeply about the future of our state. And you're hearing you're seeing lawmakers and policymakers and government officials listening even more now to those conversations and including themselves in there. So I think for many of us, it gives us hope that there can be a dialogue on this to move Hawaii forward in a way where we still have to depend on some form of tourism here, because that is something that we just don't, everyone agrees, I think, that we just don't see a way forward without it. We need to help.
I hope you have it, because my own selfish ways, I mean, that's Hawaii is our go-to place. I mean, we
absolutely
love it. It is, I've been fortunate that I've gone at least 24 times at least.
I know. I've seen you many of those times, and we love having you folks here, you know.
So it's an amazing place. And you know, you live in Pearl City, so I mean that's part of the flight path, correct? Coming in.
Yeah, it's actually a little bit north of the flight the
But you the see the planes
path.
Coming
I can
in.
I can see some planes coming through.
So have you noticed a dip in planes, a lot less than
Yeah.
Normal?
Yeah. I mean, you got, you know, if you can imagine for a period of, when was it, until I think July or August, we hadn't had any international flights hardly, right? So all the flights from Japan and stuff, they weren't flying in. Our arrivals, Johnny, and you probably know this, I mean, we're down year 98? Over year. I mean, like 9%, right? So, I mean, we basically have what we normally would have on a regular day, somewhere between 28 and maybe 35,000 visitors coming into the islands during those days. I can tell you,
2000
the daily visitor numbers. Yeah. I mean, early on it was like 800, 600, you know, we're up to now maybe 2000, 18 to, you know, 200, 2000. And on a monthly average now it's maybe like 20,000 people coming in. Right. So it's really cut back.
So are the international flights coming in from Japan and Korea? And
they're starting to, but it's mostly from Japan. They've started, you know, Japan Airlines and some of those folks have restarted some of their flights, but
is that cargo mostly, or is it, or people coming?
There's some people on those flights. A lot of it, I think initially was maybe students when they restarted it, you know, students coming back to study in the islands and essential workers, you know, business people who have to come here and conduct business for essential needs.
Right. I mean,
probably a lot of cargo coming in on those flights too.
For sure. I would love to get on one of those flights. I would think you know, not only is it not going to be full, but you know, Hawaii right now, I just can't imagine how, I mean, it's gotta be a special time. It's also a scary time.
It really is.
And a weird time. I mean, so you say you get takeout, do you go out often and are your favorite restaurants open or did they close?
Yeah, no, I mean, we do takeout. We try to do takeout a couple times a week to just support the local businesses. I mean, small businesses in the islands right now, they're really struggling. You know, we have the highest unemployment rate we've ever seen in the state. And I think one of the highest across the country, because we're so, you know, a lot of our workforce is dependent on a vibrant tourism industry.
Right.
But yeah, you know, we try to get out and do our part to do what we can. And yes, you know, to your question, a lot of our favorite spots, they're still open. They've modified their operations and, you know, there's nothing like sitting in and having a drink at the bar with your favorite bartender. But, you know, the next best thing, I guess, is just knowing that, you know, by doing the takeout, you're trying to help them keep their business afloat during these very uncertain times. So it's kind of crazy.
How about the tourist hotspots like Duke's, Waikiki, or Leonard's, where you get the malasadas, you know, my favorite shave ice place. I'm spacing on his name. You took me to it.
Wyola. I think we went to Wyola the last time you came through.
Are they open?
Those places, for the most part, if I'm not mistaken, yeah. I mean, everyone's trying to be as open as they can. Maybe modified hours, maybe shorter days. And, you know, unfortunately, probably not nearly the lines that you would have to fight through or wait in to get your hot malasadas at Leonard's, you know. But,
Yeah,
everyone who's you've seen a lot of folks adapting to this abnormal. And
how about Ala Moana Mall? Is that shut down or?
Yeah, I think the malls and things have been shut down again. So, wow. You know, you're just, and you know, even when they do reopen the malls, not all the stores are open, right? So, you know, a lot of people are playing the balancing game between, you know, putting resources back into having people employed and having the shop open and all those things that have come with running a business and what is the true revenue that's going to be coming in to those shops.
Can you go to Target at the Ala Moana Center?
Yes. Yeah. You can go to Target. Okay. But the main mall, it's.
Of course you froze right when I said Target. I don't know if it's my internet or your internet. What's that? You froze a little bit. I think you're still frozen. Hello. Is it me? It could be my internet, although it says it's strong. Let me just.
Nope. I think it's mine, buddy. Am I any better now or worse?
Yeah, you're better. Good.
Okay.
Hey, this is quarantine times. Everyone's, and I would think in Hawaii again, that the internet's got to be getting stretched, especially during business hours.
I'm actually at home right now sharing this internet with two of my kids who are distance learning right now.
Are they? As I work through the day. On Xbox or?
They're all on Zoom Classroom, Google Classroom. It's really tremendous what, I can't even imagine what it's like to be a teacher these days. Enough in the classroom, and then it's even harder now to try to figure out how to produce a game plan for kids doing it this way, you know?
Right. They're not going into the school right now.
Not going into the school right now.
Gotcha.
Yeah, that's correct.
Before I let you go, since you're such a foodie, when Hawaii does open up, tell us the best place to get Hawaiian food. On Oahu.
Oh, best place for Hawaiian food on Oahu. I mean, so many different spots. I mean, you got Highway Inn, you got Helena's. You got a ton of different spots. And I hate to favor anyone over the other. It's always the hardest question because they all have their specialties, and it always almost depends on what you want to eat, you know, and what's your mojo for that day.
Right.
So many great little places.
And what do you consider if someone says, "What's a Hawaiian dish?" What would you say? Is it pig or is it teriyaki chicken?
Yeah. So you know, there's a distinction between Hawaiian food and what might be local plate lunch kind of food, right? Okay. So when people say Hawaiian food, I think of lau lau, poi, you know, a little lomi salmon on the
What's
plate.
What's lau lau? Pork?
I'm sorry. Yeah, lau lau is the taro leaves.
Okay.
Which kind of you put pork and butterfish and other kinds of things in there that you like. People put kalo, which is a taro, and breadfruit in there, and then you wrap it up into a nice little bundle. You tie it up and then you steam it. And so when it comes out, you wrap it up in the tea leaf. And then when it comes out, the luau leaves almost look like spinach, if you will. I mean, it has that kind of cooked spinach consistency to it. And then it just opens up and you have this beautiful savory pork and butterfish with, you know, usually some pork fat in there. That's kind of just gives it a little bit more juice in there. You know, you pour some of your favorite chili pepper water on top of it. And, you know, some people like it with white rice on the side. Some people, if it's a true Hawaiian plate, you might have it with some poi, right? Which is the pounded up taro into the more liquid form.
I'm not a poi guy.
Understood. And then you'll normally have it with things like lomi salmon, and maybe there's some additional kalua pork on the side. You know, that to me is kind of a more traditional Hawaiian plate. When you talk about teriyaki chicken and maybe some of that kind of stuff, we're talking more plate lunch. So that's a local representation of a lot of different cultures coming together, basically from the plantation days, right? It's an adaptation of that. So.
Right.
You know, stories go back to the plantation days where people would come with their lunches and you'd have Filipino, Chinese, Japanese, you know, and Caucasian all kind of there working together, and everyone would share a little bit of their lunch with each other. So that's where you'd have, you know, the different ethnic groups represented on the plate. And that's why plate lunch is so popular too. You know, you can get you know, your American classics like the fried chicken and stuff alongside, you know, luau stew, right? Which is something that's very, you know, local in tradition, you know, kind of a thing.
Locomoco.
Locomoco is a favorite, right? I mean, nice hamburger, fat hamburger patty on a gravy. Bed of white rice, gravy, and a sunny side egg right on top of that.
I love that. I get a locomoco at least almost every time I'm there. So even though you're in Hawaii, but you're on the island of Oahu, you can't go to the other main islands like Maui or the Big Island, Hawaii, Kauai. Can you? Or Lanai?
Yeah. They've put back that they've put back the. Oh, I'm sorry. I think I might be. Am I breaking up again, Johnny? I think they reinstated the 14-day inter-island quarantine as well, and so. Here's where things get complicated. If Oahu people travel to any of the other neighbor islands, we have to quarantine on the other neighbor islands. If anyone from the neighbor islands come and visits us now through the end of this month, they can roam freely. They don't have to quarantine here.
Until they get back.
But if until they get back, correct. Yeah. So there's this trade-off to the whole thing, right?
Gotcha.
So yeah, we relaxed that a little bit. And once the cases started to surge again on the island of Oahu, they put it back into place. So
the place to be like Maui or, you know, another island where, you know, they don't have these restrictions and there's obviously a lot less cases.
Yeah. Well, every island has the 14-day quarantine, right? So if you're coming in from out of state on every island, you're going to quarantine.
Right.
If you're a local person now going to any island, aside from coming to Oahu, you're going to quarantine. So overall, it's just not a real conducive time to be traveling much anywhere right now. Two of the islands are within it. So,
I mean, I even heard that some hotels, they don't even want to open up right now under these restrictions because they're going to lose money if they have to open up at 25% and things like that. I'm not sure if that's true, but have you heard of that?
I've seen similar things reported, and I think that there is truth to that. You know, there is a minimum threshold of business that needs to be coming through a property, right? I mean, to be able to justify, you know, bringing staff back in, opening up your operations, incurring the cost to do all those sorts of things to run your F&B, you know, to keep the housekeeping going again, all your securities and all that sort of thing. So, you know, every hotel is probably different based on their business structure and what their targets are. I think there's pretty much consensus that, you know, we need to start seeing a minimum trickle of tourism coming back into the state. Before people can seriously be thinking about reopening, you know, their operations completely. You know, we'd like to think that maybe there's a Kama'aina market or a local market for travel during this time. And maybe there was one for a month or two, but, you know, let's be honest. I mean, the local market can't sustain the industry here and what it was producing prior to this. So, you know, we try to help and we try to do our part, but it's just, everything is just really impacted right now in the visitor industry.
Yeah. My last question, I believe.
Sure.
How do you think travel to Hawaii will be different in a post-COVID world? Will it just bounce right back, or do you think it will be different?
Yeah, from everything that I've been hearing and what you know, the economists are saying, both nationally and within the state, is it's we're going to see a real slow recovery here. You know, so much of our success is going to depend on how the rest of the country is doing. And a lot of our closures and shutdown is, you know, based upon the fact that there has just been just such a widespread of COVID across the country. And so, you know, one thing that we want to make sure that people are clear about is not that we're against visitors coming into the islands, you know, it's anyone traveling. And you know, most of the cases initially when Hawaii was experiencing an uptick in cases were situations where locals were traveling to the mainland and then returning home with the virus, you know? And so, you know, there's always been an affinity for having travelers come here, and there will always be an affinity for that, I believe. How does it look different? I think the engagement that people have with the destination is going to look different. It's going to be, you know, we talked earlier about this sort of managed tourism model going forward. And I think this pause is going to give us time to think about other situations that have happened in the islands over the last couple of years. If you look to an island like Kauai and what they did on the North Shore in Hanalei and out towards Haena, after they had the big flood there, the community had an opportunity to kind of reset what was going on out in Haena. So, you know, you impose a little bit more restrictions there to decrease access, decrease people parking illegally on the side of the roads, in people's driveways, you know, and you kind of manage the resource better, right? And I think that's something that is going to be happening more going forward. We already see things like that with Hanama Bay and Haleakala. And it's not to keep people out. And I think it's more to make sure that we can have these resources here for generations to come. You know, we can continue to overrun these things and not have the resources to maintain them. But we have a huge opportunity now to think differently about how we manage these resources that are very precious to not only visitors, to residents first and foremost. These are we hike the same trails, we go to the same places, and we want to see the same beauty. Let's just manage it smarter, you know. So maybe people coming here in the future, and I don't know, but maybe there's a little bit more, you know, visitor impact fees being assessed, you know, to hike a trail. But we believe that the people that come to Hawaii truly, clearly, you know, care deeply about this destination. They want to see it survive as much as locals want to see it survive for the most part. So
agreed.
What's $5 to hike, you know, up Diamond Head or maybe a trail like that? If they know that their money is going to be going to the sustainability of it and the maintenance of it so that we can all continue to enjoy it in years to come.
So, they should. 100% they should. I mean, I know like Diamond Head, they do charge, you know, parking. You know, last few years or 5 years ago, whenever they stated that. But
yeah. I think we're going to see some more experiences being developed that's going to put visitor closer to the community in meaningful ways. And so, you know, volunteerism, we all know, has been a big thing over the years. And people more and more we're seeing want to understand, how can I have a more positive impact during my vacation in Hawaii? Yeah. You know, sitting by the pool, doing the beach, I mean, all great, you know, let's go zip lining, let's go golf and all that. But what can I do to make Hawaii better when I leave than when I came? Right. So what small action can I do? And I think we're going to start to see more opportunities like that for visitors to continue to get involved and do that thing. So,
but living on an island, by the way, you must be having island fever. I mean, I follow you on Instagram and Twitter, and you know, before COVID, you were always traveling, especially to the mainland.
You
a couple of times. Sorry, do you have island fever?
You know, I think, you know, as much as I travel, I don't travel nearly as much as maybe other people do. Do I have island fever? Honestly, I don't at this point. I think we found plenty of other distractions during this pandemic to kind of occupy our attention. My wife and I, we've turned to gardening, you know, and we spent a lot of time now trying to build up our garden outside. And cool. I see a lot of people doing that, doing a lot more cooking at home. So, you know, we're finding ways to kind of keep ourselves occupied. Do I wish I could go see my parents on Hawaii Island, Big Island? Yeah, absolutely. I wish I could, you know, and they wish they could come and see the grandkids and all that. But I think we believe, I mean, let's just make the tough decisions now to just hunker down, try to beat this thing up a little bit more, you know, get it to a minimum again so that we can start to really enjoy whatever part of normalcy we can, you know, in the month or two ahead. So, you know, it's a small sacrifice, hopefully for a large payoff in the end, where we can kind of get back to normal and I can get my kids back to Six Flags there in California and all that kind of stuff. So
when was the last time you were on a plane? Was it when you were in Disneyland, and what was the last time you saw your parents?
Last time I saw my parents in person was probably in February. Right. And so they live on Hawaii Island. Right. Our last big trip, and I'm trying to remember, cause I think our last big trip was to California. Actually, we went to Six Flags right before all this stuff happened, and this trip to be able to do that right before all this crazy was going to hit. So,
right. My last question for sure.
Okay.
So what are you growing in your garden?
So we've got a lot of different things growing, but the kids love green beans. So we got a lot of different varieties of green beans growing. That seems to be doing well. Cucumbers are another favorite of my daughter. Eggplants, a lot of different herbs, I've been also on a focaccia bread baking binge lately. So, just making all different versions of that kind of stuff. I've got some tomatoes growing outside and trying to get a papaya tree growing.
Does it grow year round? It grows year round, I assume, right?
It does grow pretty much. And, you know, we're learning day by day and month by month what actually can grow in our garden here, you know, in the climate and maybe what can't. But it's been fun experimenting and just, you know, cleaning up the house, and it's just odds and ends kind of thing around the house too. Just been really, really fun.
I'm with you. Well, Nathan, mahalo for your time.
My pleasure, man. Mahalo to you as well.
I really can't wait to go to Hawaii, give you a hug, and get back to the beauty.
I can't wait for that either, man.
All right, buddy.
Okay.
Take care. Thank you.
You take care as well. Double shakas for you, bro.